Hi.
All right, what's up?
Hey,
everybody.
We're back. How's it going? Full year for a full circle moment. It's May, Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah,
we always like to acknowledge that. Yeah, Mike being a licensed therapist. So just like to say this right off the bat, if anybody out there feels depressed, anxious, going through anything, there's no shame in therapy.
Zero. It is so important and so beneficial. So yeah, if you're struggling in any way, call licensed therapists everywhere. And just it is so much, it takes so much strength to do that. It's not a weakness to go to therapy. It is a strength. So,
and Mike, I just remembered something so important. One of our loyal listeners, one of my closest friends, Dave Hartman, he's my dear friend, Alexis Hartman's older brother. He was one of those older brothers throughout high school and middle school. He just always looked out for me. I remember one time my car, when I was like 16, got stuck in his driveway in the snow, and he just came out and dug me out. Oh. He never made me feel stupid. But anyways, shout out to Dave Hartman. He's one of our listeners. He's awesome. We appreciate you, Dave. And he just got his master's degree in social work, and he's going to be, I'm sorry, Dave, if I'm getting your job title wrong, but he's going to be an amazing therapist. And I'm not sure if he's going to specialize in addiction counseling or anything like that, but I just want to say I want to acknowledge that accomplishment. And Dave, you're awesome, and thank you also for being one of our loyal listeners. So
thanks, Dave, and congrats. That's so cool. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah.
Very rewarding work. It's the best decision
he's
I ever
made. It's gonna be incredible. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, today we got a very exciting episode. We have an incredible guest, a friend of ours named Sue Ann Spoke. For anybody listening, she's on a very, very incredible, popular hit show with Renee Zellweger called The Thing About Pam. It's on Hulu and Peacock. Check it out. Six episodes.
NBC, I believe. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so good. It's a riveting story. She plays a character who is a real life person named Janet Meyer, who was the mother of a woman named Betsy that was tragically murdered. And the story kind of picks up with her murder and then kind of goes into the story of this woman named Pam, who I don't want to give anything away, who is just a nightmare human being. It's her story, and Renee Zellweger plays Pam brilliantly. And so Sue Ann, our friend, we talk a lot about acting in this episode and about her experiences working on the set of The Thing About Pam, what it's like for her to get into character and her process and just go through kind of her career and her experiences and whatnot. But I'm just going to rattle off a list just so our listeners know of all of the amazing things that Sue Ann has worked on. Listen to this. I mean, it's nuts. Her resume is absolutely insane. She's been on every one of my favorite shows of all time. So, but here, That 70s Show, X-Files, Family Matters, Third Rock from the Sun, The Jamie Foxx Show, Party of Five, Step by Step, Larry Sanders Show, Golden Girls. Did I say Step by Step? If I didn't, I'll say it again.
Did.
Yeah, Step by Step. Beverly Hills 90210, Seinfeld, my favorite show. Station 19, which is a newer show, big hit, Switched at Birth, Criminal Minds, ER, Gilmore Girls, Weeds, Dharma and Greg. I mean, it's insane. And then in film, it's nuts. And then the films that she's done, Whiplash with J.K. Simmons, which is an incredible movie. She's great in that. A movie called Crazy Love, which I didn't tell her about, which was directed by my dear friend Ellie Kanner, who I did Dropping the Soap with. I didn't get a chance to talk to Sue Ann about that. But yeah, we have that connection as well. War of the Worlds with my favorite director of all time, freaking Spielberg. She worked on Krippendorf's Tribe, the movie Wild Prairie Rose that we talk about with Troy Kotsur, who just won the Oscar for Coda. Well beyond deserved. And then Mascots with freaking Christopher Guest. You know, the list is just nuts. Look her up on IMDb. You can see that this is a woman that has a plethora of experience in the business. So we were really happy to talk to her and very grateful that she took the time to talk to us. So
and she's so bitchin'. Sue Ann could not be a cooler person.
She really is the coolest.
I'm such a fangirl of hers, and she holds it down.
Yeah.
And Think About Pam. She has a huge part.
Yeah.
Be on the lookout for her. She plays the mother of the victim, and she's holding it down with huge stars, and we could not be more proud of her. Mike and I met her at the Rogue Theater in North Hollywood. You know, we're all theater folk, and she's had a great career. So it's a great episode.
Yeah, she really is incredible on the show, and so unlike her character in real life. You know, like Suzanne is just Janet's very like, you know, soft spoken and sweet,
Midwest
completely. And Suzanne is very sweet as well, but she is much more badass and more, you know,
theatrical,
I would say more
alpha,
in your face. Like you know, she'll tell you, you know. I think Suzanne would be much more blunt than Janet in terms of feelings, which I love and I admire and respect immensely. So anyway, check it out. Think about Pam to our listeners. Shayna, you have some stuff coming up. I'm really excited for you and congrats. A lot of good big news. So share
cool
with
things.
Our listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, a couple quick things. Okay, number one, this was hilarious. And of course I had to text Mike immediately as soon as this happened. It's hilarious and really fun. So I'm a, you know, I'm kind of a podcast junkie, you know, part of why we started our podcast. And one of my favorite podcasts is Sarah Silverman's podcast. And, you know, Sarah Silverman's a wildly famous comedian. Everybody knows who Sarah is. Her podcast is one of the most popular podcasts in the world. She gets callers in from New Zealand, Germany, all over the place. And she takes voicemails. She doesn't have guests. So she's got this really funny bit where there's this recording that goes, "Let's hear some voicemails." And I had decided to call in and leave her a voicemail a few months ago. I was like, this will never get played, but let's try. I didn't even know if I was sending it to the right link. And I just remember Sarah very openly talks about being godless. She labels herself as being godless. Mm-hmm. She just doesn't believe in God. Okay, fine. And I'm a pretty spiritual person, and I intently listened to that, and I thought it was so interesting. She had talked about her mom in a few episodes, and her mom had passed away, and you could tell Sarah was very close to her mother. A lot of her stand-up is about her mother and, you know, the bond they shared, and she goes into detail in one of the episodes talking about how at the moment her mother died, she says she was there 1 minute and then she was gone. And I was like, where did she go? And this is what prompted my voicemail a few months ago. I just called and I said something like, you know, I know you're godless. You talk about that a lot, but you mentioned the death of your mother in a few episodes and you said, where did she go? And I said, you know, I thought to myself, Sarah believes in the soul. And that was my question to her. Do you believe in the soul? Because I think you do. And 3 months later, the weekend of Mother's Day, let's talk about synchronicities. I don't think there's any mistakes. And I just said, I believe in the soul and spirit. I know Mike does too. Mm-hmm. I'm driving down Main Street. I also believe in signs in downtown Rochester, Main Street. I'm driving along, kind of a hot day, whatever. I'm heading to my mother's house. And I'm just kind of cruising. And I was listening to Sarah's podcast in this one episode in like chunks. And I saw the title of the podcast was Roe versus Wade, a big topic happening right now, souls, comma, and getting fired. And I thought, souls, I wonder if she played my voicemail and I forgot about it. And I was driving down Main Street in traffic and I was half listening, probably running through a to-do list in my head. And all of a sudden I'm listening and I'm half listening for about 15 seconds. And I was like, wait a minute, holy shit, that's my voice. This is my voicemail. And I just like get the biggest grin on my face. I was stunned. And I look to my right and I pass by this place on Main Street. It's called Detroit Tarot. It's one of my favorite stores. And next to it, it says Soul Sisters, this other store spelled like the soul of a shoe. And I thought, oh my gosh, my interpretation of that was 3 months later, her mom came through and she got to play that voicemail on her Mother's Day. So, and her answer is so fun and it's comedic and she finds something. If you listen to it, it's about 24 minutes into the episode. It's on YouTube too, or your podcast. It's right after a commercial. Her answer is hilarious and heartfelt. And she says she does believe in the soul. She's just not sure where they go. And I fucking love Sarah.
So cool, that was great.
I just didn't expect that. because she gets so many voicemails. So that was a real treat, and I got to fangirl out. So shout out to Sarah. I do feel she's, I feel a soul connection with her. She's fucking great.
Oh my God, I love her so much. And yeah, the episode, yeah. Anybody listening, it's from May 5th. It's called Roe versus Wade, Souls Getting Fired is the episode, just anybody listening, yeah.
Oh, thank you for that, Mike. Yeah, and it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you listen to your podcast, it's free. And, you know, Sarah, gotta say it, she's a huge mental health advocate. She talked very openly about how, you know, taking Zoloft her whole life has been a saving grace for her. And I say that because she talks about it so openly. She talks about therapy so openly. She has been a saving grace to so many people during the pandemic. So she's not just a comedian. She's so many other things. And I love it when she says, it's your best friend, Sarah, because mm-hmm. she kind of feels like everybody's best friend. So yeah, thank you for that, Mike. And just another couple of quick things. Our third guest on Film Says World was my dear friend and filmmaker and actor and singer, Andrew Rutland. I co-directed Letter to America with Love with him, and he texted me today and he said our film is on Tubi. So you can get the Tubi app. I believe it's free. You can watch Letter to America with Love on there. Andrew's so proud of you and so excited because that's a piece very near and dear to our hearts. And also upcoming stuff I'm in pre-production for, my closest friend on the planet, Ariel Robinson, shout out to you, girl. Haley from Missouri, we met in LA, she moved back to her hometown in Missouri. She has written a short film called Birdie, spelled B-I-R-D-E. It is about maternal mental health. And she hired me to direct. So I'm excited about that. We are slated to film in September on location in Missouri. And after we are done filming, we will for sure have her as a guest. She will be the lead actor. She's the writer, producer. So she's been working her ass off for about a year. And in between my job, we're always on production calls. So excited for that. And that's it. And Mike, I know you have some shows.
No, congrats on all that. That's really, really cool and exciting. And I can't wait to hear all about
Thank
it.
You.
And yeah, cool. Proud of you. And I don't have anything important really to talk about other than I just am obsessed with these two shows right now. So any of our listeners, on top of the thing about Pam, which I binge watched in literally, I think like a day and a half. It's
so fun.
It's so good. It's so freaking fascinating. And anybody, I challenge you to watch it and not be riveted by it. It's so fun so well done. And it's a you know, very serious subject matter like we talked about, but also Absolutely. They balance like very absurd comedic moments into the show that are so much fun. Keith Morrison from Dateline, anybody knows who he is, Bill Hader does the best impression ever of him, and he does these really fun voiceovers throughout the whole series. And we'll talk about the show.
And I feel so bad calling the thing about Pam fun, because it is a very, it's based on a very devastating true crime story. And, you know, to the families, and so sorry for their loss. It was absolutely horrible. But what I mean by fun is we're talking about, we get into the depths of this with Suzanne, creative direction, where they were able to make a very serious story about true crime, about psychosis, about psychopathy, a sociopath, and then also somehow magically weave in this satirical comedic element to move the story forward.
In
an amazing way. It's very masterfully done.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, like, how do you balance that comedy and drama, and the direction and the editing and these wonderful actors achieve
yeah.
that.
So that's, and usually, that's what we mean by that. You're in exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's fun from the standpoint of you're seeing things through
creativity.
Pam, the person who this show is about is the definition of a personality disorder. And so you will see things through her eyes. And whenever it's through her eyes, it's very absurd and over the top. And she's the hero. And we see how she's the victim and how amazing she is. And how, you
know. Keith Morrison says, she's everybody's best friend. Yeah. She's your neighbor next door.
Yeah.
Think about Pam. And that's the part you just can't help but laugh, because it's what he's saying. You're like, what? Because it's very, she really views herself that way. She's an upstanding citizen.
Oh yeah, she's perfect.
And all her behavior is completely rational.
Yeah.
You know, it's all justified.
Yeah.
So check it out. But Mike, you're on the
really good. Anyway, real quick, watch, they're both on Apple TV. The first show is Severance. It's directed by Ben Stiller.
I love Ben Solo.
And starring Adam Scott. I'm trying to think. Her name's Britt Lauer. Amazing actress. John Turturro, who I love. Okay. And then another celebrity in it that I don't want to spoil if you don't know that he's in it. But when he shows up, it's like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. It's the best show I've seen in a very long time.
I don't have Apple TV, should I pay for another app?
Yes.
Three months?
Yes, I was going to say, though. I think if you get an iPhone, or do you have an iPhone? You get a free year, I think, or something, if you register. Snap.
All right.
I'm pretty sure. Maybe it's one of the newer iPhones. I don't know. But anyway, Severance, I just was riveted. Like, just could not get enough of that show. Severance. And I love it so much. It's so well done. And then another show on Apple TV called Servant, another S. So Severance and Servant.
Okay.
Obsessed with this show. It is so freaking good.
Do you think I'll like it?
Yes.
You know me well enough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Lauren Ambrose from 6 Feet Under is the lead, and she's so fucking good on the show. Okay. She's always good, but like, just watch it. It's I don't want to spoil anything, but all I'll say is that they have a doll. They hire a nanny to come into their house. Lauren Ambrose's character and her husband. And the nanny comes in to take care of their quote unquote baby. And when she gets there, the baby is a doll. And Lauren Ambrose is convinced that the doll is real. And that's all I'll say. And
we've got
the show,
Lars of the Real Girl vibe happening.
But just wait. And the show just goes
bananas
off the rails from there. And it's wonderful.
Some great writing.
It's wonderful. Right. And my friend who his name's Michael Giolakis, we've talked about him on the show before, but he shot a lot of it. He's the DP on a lot of the episodes. He did It Follows and a lot of other.
Oh, we talked about him. Yeah.
Yeah. He's brilliant. He really is one of the best DPs out there, but so good. So anyway, I can't rave about that show enough. Just from a writing standpoint, acting, each episode's only 30 minutes. So you get 10 episodes a season, 30 minutes. You can blow through it quickly. On season 3 now, episode 2 of season 3, and I cannot rave about it enough. Anyway, I just had to talk about that. And
I have one more thing I forgot. I got to talk about a thing. I never watch a show once. I watch shows like 4 times, and then I kind of like let them play in the background while I work. Really important piece that's out there. Mike, have you seen Phoenix Rising by Evan Rachel Wood?
Not yet, but I'm going to watch that this week because I hear it's very incredibly well done and obviously very important.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So I saw the trailer for this about 6 months ago and I just was like, holy shit, I got to watch this. Fan of her work. This is a documentary where she and other women come forward with the talking about the same abuser. It's so interesting that the emotion that I'm having right now, I don't even feel comfortable saying his name for some reason. And I don't know if that says more about me than anything, but it's out there. You can YouTube it. She comes forward and it's like Mike said, it's brilliantly directed by female director Amy Berg, and the editing is tremendous. The way they illustrate, there's talk about cartoon, and there's during Evan Rachel Wood's voiceover recalling events and recalling events from her childhood, they find a way to illustrate this almost like it's like a storybook. So when something is well directed and executed, even in the documentary format, I'm so sucked in and fascinated by that. That's why I think I watched it more than once, but what she does is incredibly brave. She's an activist. It's called Phoenix Rising on HBO Max or HBO, and it's a 2-part series. Highly recommend it. Super important piece. It just is. So I can't say much more about it, but she was brave to come forward, and I'll just say it because she was brave enough to say it. She is coming forward about her relationship with Brian Warner, known to the world as Marilyn Manson. So that's it. So shout out to Evan Rachel Wood. She's great. So that's all I'll say. I wanted to mention that.
Hell yeah. All right, cool. Well, lots to unpack and dive in. So let's do it. Let's start the episode. Hope everybody listening enjoys.
Here it is with Sue Ann Spoke.
Oh my God, what happened? Some kind of accident?
Oh, she's not accidentally dead.
Oh. You know, they always look at the husband first. So, do police need a witness, evidence, stuff like that?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Some people just asking for trouble.
Hey. Welcome to Film Saints World.
Hello.
We have Sue Ann Spoke today, and we are so excited to have you, Sue Ann.
Okay, keep the enthusiasm down.
We're both like cheerleaders. Yes. I'm a huge fan of your work. I have been for years. I've gotten to work with you in little bits. You participated in my project in 2020, Still We Rise, when we recited Maya Angelou's Still I Rise with like 120 people from around the world. So thank you for doing that. That was a good excuse for me to work with you. And then we last year did a little play reading with our dear friend Michael Dempsey, who we're all three friends with from the Road Theater. So got to work with you a little bit.
That was a great script. I love doing that.
That was a great script. I still think about that all the time. So shout out to our friend Michael Dempsey. But just to give our listeners a little bit of an intro here. So the three of us have a theater company in common. We were all three Road Theater members out of North Hollywood, California. Are you still a roadie, Sue Ann?
No, I haven't. I actually have not had a theater home in a while. And I think some of that has been exacerbated by the fact that I'm old now and tired and don't want to volunteer.
Like, don't want to volunteer anymore either.
No, I totally get that. It's a lot of work.
You know, also because I like to produce my own work.
Me too. Yes.
I have a piece that I have wanted to do for a long time, and I haven't quite gotten a nibble on it. Sure. And if I have a chance to put something up, I would like it to be this piece. Mm-hmm. And if not, just sort of in my private pandemic time, after Joan Didion died, I decided to take a look at The Year of Magical Thinking, her one woman piece about the death of her.
Nice.
All right, let's talk about No. Okay, our listeners can't see this, but a moment of serendipity. I'm a big believer in signs and like just
when
you talk to the universe, it talks back. I'm holding the play, The Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion, in my hand right now.
Did
you know she was going to bring that up?
No.
Wow, that's nuts. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. My husband calls me a bruja, and said with love, which is, you know, witchy. He said,
this kind of stuff happens to me all the time.
Love it.
Well, and let me tell you the weirdness of this. Oh, I love stuff like this.
That is so cool.
Here's what's so weird, Sue Ann, but it's a synchronicity. So we'll have to, I'm thinking, before I even knew what play it was, I was like, I want to talk to her about this. What is this play? I wanted to order something by a piece by Joan Didion, and I got on Amazon and I ordered something, and I was like, oh, it's a play. I was going to give it to my mother. I tried to cancel the order. I was like, oh, it's taking too long. It's taking like 6 weeks and they're shipping it from England. Just cancel it. And then they're like, no, you can have your money back, but you're getting this play anyways. So it's like the universe sent I haven't even read it yet. But it's just sitting there collecting dust. Now I'm going to read it tonight, and I'm so excited. Something just happened there.
That is so awesome.
Fate. Okay, cool. What? Yeah. All right, so this is already interesting. the witchy thing, like, yes, like the universe. I always say when you talk to the universe, it will talk back to you. Like, validations right away. But I was like, isn't this the book that I have sitting there? And I was just... Okay, so
that's just something that I've just been playing with by myself, because obviously we can do that. given the solitary conditions that we've been under, and because, I don't want to lose a sense of being able to take in, material and, learn it and investigate it and, like that and like that. But no, I haven't really. I think the last couple pieces that I've done have been at the Fountain Theater.
Oh, very cool.
In Los Angeles, yeah. Awesome. Which has been a home base off and on for me for years. And of course, I would love to do something again with Deaf West, which was another place that
yes.
worked. And,
Well, talk to us about that for a second, Sudan, because all right, I'm literally the worst with names because I'm such a visual person. I could see him. He won the Oscar.
Troy Kotsur.
And you worked with him, correct?
I've worked with him a lot. And
did you do a streetcar with him, or did I make that up? Streetcar.
Did I what?
Did you do a streetcar with him?
Yes.
Okay.
He and I did Streetcar Named Desire together, and I was Blanche, and he was Stanley.
Oh, and, I would love to have seen that.
Yeah, it was probably the most challenging and the most gratifying theatrical experience of my entire life.
I believe it.
And I think that the whole piece was really elevated because of the way that ASL was incorporated into the production. Mm-hmm. I was the only one that simcommed. I voiced and signed at the same time, mm-hmm. Which I did not have expertise in, let me tell you.
Wow.
I had some rudimentary signing skills, and I'd been affiliated with Deaf West for a long time because mm-hmm. I thought their work was so incredibly breathtaking and innovative. But what we did in that piece is we had a second story of where people lived on the balcony and swept and fanned and rocked and those were the people who became the voices for the people who were signing in the scene. And the conceit was that when, Blanche goes back to Stella, that Stella is deaf. And of course now has this deaf husband. And there are communities where, deaf people were isolated, deaf and hard of hearing people were isolated. So it takes that idea of going down the economic rung even further and more specifically. And in the first scene, it became really clear, when Blanche says to Stella, you're so quiet. Why don't you ever talk? Why don't you, suddenly it's just like loaded.
Oh my gosh.
But I will tell you, I had seen Troy do a production at the Odyssey Theater, which is another theater in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. He did Romeo and Juliet, and he played Romeo.
Wow.
And that conceit was the Montagues were the acrobats and
Capulets.
Thank you.
I know Shakespeare name, but I can't remember it.
Frank Park. I have to take some Prevagen before I go on. That the Capulets were acrobats and the Montagues were clowns.
Oh.
And when they did the balcony scene, my friend actually played Juliet. She was an aerial artist.
And
she was up on silk ropes up at the top of the theater, and he was down below spinning her on this.
That's incredible. Silk rope.
And at the end of the whole scene, she unravels down into his arms in a pool of light with Troy playing. So I've known Troy for a long time, and we did a film together a few years ago called Wild Prairie Rose, where he was the romantic lead. It's on Amazon if you haven't had a chance to see it.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. And I think it's a beautiful film. It was directed by Deborah Levine, who had done a lot of theater here in Los Angeles for years and years and years. And I'm very proud of that film. And I'm proud to have known him and loved him and appreciated him way before, the rest of the world got hip
Yeah.
who he was, and
It's
so
yeah.
deserving, I thought.
Oh, it's so he's so amazing in Coda, and obviously he's done so much great work before that that now more people are going to discover, and it's pretty awesome and very deserving. And with you, Sue Ann, yeah, it's been a long time since we've seen each other, which is crazy. And
Yes.
year like over 10 years probably since I've left the road and
Oh my
moved back to
gosh.
Michigan, which is crazy. But your resume is just amazing, and we're gonna talk about all this in our intro. So, because yeah, you've been on literally all of my favorite shows,
Yep.
like
You've had a
literally.
beautiful, beautiful career. If our listeners pull up Sue Ann's IMDb, Sue Ann Spoke, your credits are
Yeah.
10 miles long. So yeah, Mike, go ahead.
I was just watching Seinfeld in your episode that the jacket was just on, and I was watching it. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I've talked about it a
I
lot.
was
Well,
just watching in
yeah.
Seinfeld. Which episode? You
The
said it's called The
jacket.
Jacket?
Yeah,
Called The
yeah.
Jacket.
Oh,
Where he
yeah.
has this, I guess, a suede jacket that has a pink and white stripe.
Yeah.
And we get to meet Elaine's father, who,
Ooh.
that
Yeah.
guy, let me just tell you, crazy as a
I'm writing
bedbug.
all this down so I remember. Well, Mike, let me jump in for 2 seconds just
Yes.
to get on your bandwagon here. I recently binged watched 90210.
Oh, yeah.
Guilty pleasure, because, like, 90210 was out when I was like 10 years old. So this was me looking up to the Gen X generation and my older sister's crowd. And I was in love with Luke Perry. And I'm just kind of zoning
Oh,
out
bless
watching
his
it.
heart.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. And I was zoning out one day just watching it. And I think, I don't know if this is the episode where Brenda has a pregnancy scare or something's going on. Maybe it's Andrea's pregnant. Someone has something going on, and there's a doctor, a physician in a white lab coat, and I look up and I go, Sue Ann! I had to take a picture and post it on your Facebook
I actually think I had kind of a mullet at
You
that
had like the early 80s face that my mother had when she was younger back in the day. I was
I
like,
look like
yes!
either an abortion doctor or Rod Stewart, so I'm not really,
So
and my hair is that blonde.
you look like a
So
badass is what you look like.
it was early 90s chic, and I was like, yes, Sue Ann, so you're everywhere.
I actually think I did another one. I did some voiceover work, some looping for them as well, unidentifiable, but yeah, that was I had almost forgotten that I had done that show.
It was so funny, Mike. I posted the picture on her Facebook page, and Sue Ann says, what the hell is going on with my hair? But you were great, and it's just
Thank
like
you.
you. I love that when we see our theater friends on TV, we're like, wait, what? It all You just have to stop and pause for a second, and
Oh, I
yeah,
love it. It's the
it's
best. And
great.
well, let's talk about that. So I'm like, I want to know, I mean, about like how did you get started? The traditional question as an actor, what was it that made you say, I want to be an actor? And then how did you get started?
You hail from Pennsylvania, right?
I grew up in
Originally.
Northwestern Pennsylvania, a very small town, very small town girl, let me just tell you. I drove a tractor before I drove a
Nice.
car, and
Love it.
in my graduating class, which was a public school, there were 46 students, and 10 of them were my cousins. Small town, okay? Really small town. But for as long as I can remember, I wanted to be an actor. I remember actually going through, my parents' dresser drawers to see if there were adoption papers, because I felt like I was such an odd duck in the middle of these farmers and factory workers and, but I will never forget that. I'm really going to date myself here, but watching Dr. Kildare, which was a medical drama starring Richard Chamberlain, and there was a two-part episode called Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, starring Yvette Mimieux as an epileptic surfer. And of course, they fell in love, and he told her she couldn't surf, and she had to surf because she had a passion. And we see her on the board, and then she collapses. And
oh no! You know,
lots of drama there.
Yeah, she drowns at sea, and was like, I have to go to California. Why? You know,
I'm gonna go do that.
I must have that drama in my life, and you know. So when I originally went to college. I went as a French education major with a theater minor. And at that time, your parents had to sign off on what your major was.
Oh, hilarious. And wait, where did you go to school? Where did you go to college?
I went to Penn State.
Okay, got it.
I went to Penn State. And so I ended up forging their signature.
And
hilarious.
To theater. And that's all I really wanted to do. And I kind of dropped out of school, not with a plan, of course. I ended up going, I did some summer stock in Newport, and that company fell apart. And then I was part of a dance company. And then I came back to school, and I never let them know that I was leaving. So I had to have like a phys ed credit, even though I was a dance minor. And I ended up doing my last credits, which was a health class and a math class. I did it through a correspondence course, even though I was living in the town and could have gone to the class. And the next day after my last test, I got on a bus. I got on a Greyhound bus with 3 cardboard boxes and $50 and moved out here.
Wow.
Wow.
And there was a man involved that I was, moving out here to live with. And I didn't really want a New York career. I don't know why, even though I loved the theater. California was my place.
Wow.
It was my heart song, you know, that I had to have California.
Yeah. Had you visited it? Oh, yeah. Did you visit it first before moving there, or you just blindly moved?
No, I spring break, I guess, of that year that I moved out. I came out here for the first time and stayed for like 10 days and checked it out. And my ex-husband, I went on to marry that lovely man that I moved out here to be with, became a writer. And he wrote for a late night comedy show called Fridays.
Yeah.
It was actually how I met all the Seinfeld people, because Michael Richards was a cast member, Larry Charles and Larry David. Larry David was actually a cast member and like a writer for the show. That's how I met all those people originally. And I did a lot of the short films. There was a young filmmaker named Tom Kramer, who was like 19 at the time, and he was shooting on film. And I did several of their short, funny comedy films for that show. It was on from like 81, 82, 83. I can't remember.
Did they name Kramer after him? Speaking of Michael Richards, I wonder if I've been binge watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, like seeing season 1.
Yeah.
It still holds up. Still holds up.
And Larry is exactly as you see him.
From the first
moment I met him, he is exactly,
awesome.
Yeah. So, and then sort of one thing just led to another, and I started doing theater, and I'm not quite sure how things happened, you know, because it's long ago and far away.
And you stuck to LA, you stuck to Los Angeles, your soul city. So you stayed out there. You know, Mike and I are like, he lived there 10 years. I think I did 15, and I just got this gravitational pull back to Michigan. I was completely in denial that I left. I never really said goodbye, and we're still grasping onto the industry with our claws. And one way was, I said in 2020, let's do a podcast. So here we are.
Well, that's a very, I mean, if nothing else, I certainly think that the pandemic has taught us to be, you know, self-reliant and to endure and to reinvent the wheel and persevere and see what we can create and do remotely. And, you know, I think I try to look more often than not at what the benefit of difficult circumstances can be. And certainly I appreciate your inspiration to do something and the follow through. You know, people get inspired a lot
and then it falls out the bottom.
And don't follow through. Yeah. So the proof is in the pudding. You're actually doing it. And I think that's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. That's sweet. Yeah. We like to, Shane and I, that's what we've always been drawn to each other for, is that if we say we're going to do something, we do it.
We do
that's
it.
For sure.
We
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
We might have to reschedule 50 times because Mike and I both work day jobs like 50 hours a week outside of the industry, but we did it. We committed to a date. We got here with Suanne, which I'm excited about. The other thing is, Mike, I know you want to talk about, there's a couple things we want to talk about.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
We're going to talk about this hit show you have out
right
now.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed.
Thing about Pam,
yes.
Which we'll talk about. And, you know, if you just go into the laundry list, we'll say this in the intro, your TV credits are off the chain. We're not just talking about Seinfeld and 90210. ER is on there too, right? General Hospital.
Yeah, I did ER. I did General Hospital. It's hard. You know, sometimes I think, I did that show? You know,
and it's
interesting because, you know, I did a lot of comedy.
Yeah.
A lot of comedy.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't get hired in hour-long episodic. And then I started playing like comedic figures in hour-long episodic. And then those figures became more tragic.
Yes.
In hour-long episodic. And now I'm finding it really hard to kind of get back into doing comedy, which is kind of an area where I feel really comfortable, you know? So I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to, you know, do a fun kind of half hour again, you know, actually in a studio.
Yeah.
It feels like theater, right?
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
After Pam, now that are you getting offers or any calls for more drama?
Well, you know, man plans and God just laughs out loud, because it's been really relatively quiet since the show. I mean, I've had a few nice auditions, really substantial, but you know, nothing's gone out of the, you know, we haven't hit anything out of the ballpark yet. But, you know, if nothing else, I have learned that, you know, patience wins out. And this is a business where, you know, where and when you plant seeds are not, they're not linear and they're not logical. And you don't know where something is blooming that you have not been watching or tending to. You know, it's like all of a sudden somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, you know, how about this? For the thing about Pam, I was called in by Terry Taylor, a wonderful casting director, and she had cast me or brought me in for Whiplash when I did Whiplash. And we got along really well, and she was incredibly supportive and remained so. And, you know, she said, I'll bring you in. And, you know, and then you don't hear anything for 3 or 4 years. And then all of a sudden you're being called in for something that's as fantastic as, you know, the thing about Pam was. I mean, it's not that I didn't take it seriously. I always take the audition process really seriously and try to do the best job that I can. And, you know, when I work with my husband and he reads with me and does all the techno things, I'm a Luddite, you know, I have no idea what's going on. So he does it. And, you know, it was like a series regular. And would you be willing to go to New Orleans from September to December? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I'm actually, fortunately, I am under contract for, I'm on the faculty at the California Institute of the Arts, which is one of the greatest gifts and opportunities I've ever had. And I teach acting to graduate film directors. fabulous, you know.
What a great gig.
So cool.
Oh, it is. And amazing. I love them. I love these students so much. Mm-hmm. And we have mm-hmm. such a diverse group, and we have like 50 countries represented in this very small arts institute. And I was scheduled to go, you know, teach in September. And, you know, I said, sure, I'm available.
Yeah.
You know. And then they called back like a couple weeks later and said, are you sure you're available? Because they like you. And I'm like, yeah, they're just, you know, they're talking to, you know, names and series regulars. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm available.
And of course, and then, that's when you book something. Yep.
You know,
let me ask this real quick, just because the audition process is really interesting to a lot mm-hmm. of our listeners, especially those not in the industry. Did you have to do a self-tape for this first? Or
I did a self-tape.
Okay, you did a self-tape first. And did you know this involved Renee Zellweger?
Yes.
Already? Okay, so you knew immediately.
I knew. Okay. Well, I when you get the information, it's like, this is the project. It's a limited series. You know all the details of it. I was one of the few people on the planet who did not know the story, and they were good enough to send me the entire first episode, and I'm reading it, and I was gobsmacked.
God sucked in. I mean, that's what happened. Mike and I.
Oh, yeah.
She did what?
It's the craziest story. It really is nuts.
I know. And you sort of look at, you know, what is in the zeitgeist right now. You look at Inventing Anna. What was the other one with Amanda
Elizabeth Seaf? Holmes. Elizabeth Holmes. Oh, my God.
That's another one. And then this. And now Candy is out, which is another sort of this very benign, malicious.
The staircase.
Malevolent. The staircase. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to see these women who are at the center of the narrative, who are the perpetrators.
The true crime.
That's really fascinating because I can't say that I'm a huge true crime buff, but like Mayor of Easttown and Broadchurch, you know, these are stories where we are tracking with the detectives.
Yes.
We are trying to figure out the crime. We are, you know, part of the thrill for the audience is that a clue? Am I ahead of the detective? Yeah. You know, that's
it's
what we pat ourselves
sure
on the back. It's like, I've got it figured out. I know who it is. And that kind of carries us through. But these stories are so unusual because we get to see or examine some of the psyche and then as observers, we're saying, when will they get caught? Mm. When will they pay?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to nip this in the bud. And I think that's what carries us through that, you know, how deceitful and manipulative I guess it's part of our time right now in terms of what we look at and what people are getting away with, which I don't want to address any politics. But, you know,
Mike and I always have to stop. I have a very conservative colleague, a male colleague out of, shout out to Patrick Gordon. He loves our podcast and he takes notes, but he's very conservative. And he's like, listen, you couldn't leave your politics out of the pilot episode. I love that.
Sorry, Patrick.
Yeah, he's keeping an open mind and listening.
Know.
And he watched Think About Pam too, Sue-Ann. But what I love about telling Mike to watch something, I said, all right, we have Sue-Ann spoke, she's coming on. The best part about you watching something new, Mike, is your text. He was like, I'm on episode 3 of Think About Pam. What the fuck is going on with this woman? Sue-Ann is so good, but did this town believe these lies?
She's getting literally caught, like caught in lies with the police.
And
she's the worst liar ever, but they all believe her. That's what blew me away. Even sweet little Janet. Janet's so sweet. I love what you did with Janet. Did you get a chance to meet the real life Janet?
I didn't, and to tell you the truth, that was actually my preference.
Okay.
I saw some footage and some interview stuff with her, and there were a couple of key moments that I thought this really inspires me about who she is and how best to honor her and hold her in a very respectful light.
Suzanne, can I tell you my favorite moment of yours? That it's a favorite moment, but it's heart-wrenching. Ugh, as the mother, so our listeners know, you play the mother of the victim who is murdered. It's when Renee Zellweger gets her in the car, bullies her into leaving the house, and you're on the driveway. In the driveway, you say, "I didn't get to get my hug," and she just looks at you and says, "You know, I'll see you tomorrow." And that moment just ripped my heart out. I was like, "Oh yeah, no!" And you're not aggressive at all. You're a very passive lady in this, that you're just trying to appease, and you're so nice to Pam, and that moment is just so good.
So yeah. I made a couple notes, Suzanne, of the moments when you really were, I was just, where you got me, and but the first part where you really won me over, right, which was instantly, but was the wave when they're leaving, when Betsy and Pam are driving away, and your wave, the Midwest, the wave, it keeps going and going. My whole family does that.
The mom wave.
Yep. And it just, for any of our listeners, if you watch it, you'll know, you'll see it. It's the endless wave. It never stops. The car is going to be 2 miles away, and sweet Janet's going to be standing in the driveway waving. And
it's,
I love
so
that.
Funny, pulling out of my parents' house, home, mm-hmm. which I did for years, and they would be standing on the porch together.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, I would turn my head back as far as I could see, and they, you know, especially my mom. Would still be waving,
perfect.
You know.
So
and there
perfect.
Were, you know, there were definitely moments where I felt like I was, you know, able to channel her a little, and my grandmother as well.
Nice.
You know? And there's also this, you know, reluctance. There's a stoicism, but there's also a reluctance to challenge people, to call them out on their stuff, which I think is one of the things that, even when, you know, Pam kind of barges in at Christmas and it's like, well, let's take your coat or have a drink, or, you know, she doesn't challenge her in her own home, because there's just that sense of, well, we just don't, you know, we just accept what's,
yeah,
you know, who's who, and, you know.
And she ruins the Yeah, ruins your beanbag or the deliberately, and then no one questions her. It's like, she's like, "Oh, how'd that get there?" And everyone's like, "Oh, well, it couldn't have been Pam that did it. It's like, but she's the only one with her shoes on, and it's like, she was just sitting there. But no one questions her, like you said, at all for a while, which is it's truly fascinating. But I have to say too, when you're on the phone, and I'm not spoiling anything, but just the phone call to Pam that you have where you're pleading with her to give the money to the kids was just so good, Suzanne. Like, you're so believable and so genuinely real. We talk about this a lot on the show about, and that's something I'm still as an actor working on, is and I have a very rubbery face, and it's like how to underplay things, like how to just be in the moment. Yeah. And be a human being, real, genuine, just pure and honest. Like, everything you do always, but in this too, especially, like, just, it's so genuinely real. Like, it just feels like you're watching, that you're not you, you're Janet in those moments in the show.
Oh,
and I applaud you for it. It's incredible acting class to watch you in the show. And I don't want to spoil anything, but the marijuana line at the end is just amazing. Like, it made me laugh
it's so cute. It's
so
funny,
sweet.
Because my inclination, really, again, this goes back to like a comedic notion. My inclination was to, you know, don't get involved in that marijuana out there, or whatever, you know, whatever the line is. And every time I did it, the crew was laughing, and the director just came over and said, No. She has to be. And I was like, I can't help it.
Yeah.
It's a hilarious line.
She's
I'm sorry.
Serious.
Yeah.
I want to say something too, a little, I was debating whether or not I wanted to talk about this, but I'm going to. So I run a group on Facebook. Mike, you're not in this group because it's called Women in Film International.
Well, yeah, and understandable.
At first I shared this story. I had no idea Sue Ann was in the thing about Pam. And I shared this story, a writer wrote about this, about Renee Zellweger playing this part. And they were kind of talking about, okay, you know, step aside and actually give a female who is a plus size actress a chance to do this kind of role. You know, Renee Zellweger, Oscar winner, she is known for her transformation. And I kind of opened up the dialogue in that group and thought, well, what do you ladies think? Interesting dialogue opened up, and Sue Ann was like, well, you know, let's open up this conversation. I'm wearing a wig. Am I not supposed to wear a wig? Or what about the artists that have prosthetics, et cetera? So I went, all right, wait a minute. Sue Ann has a part in this. So now I have to watch this. And I want to now. And I watched it. And me going in and going, come on, Renee, give one of us plus size ladies a chance. There's no way you can't get on board with Renee, because it's like Amanda Seyfried in The Dropout. It's a master's class in acting. She is balls to the walls. This woman goes all in. And I'm just like, all right, I threw my hands up. I was like, I got to give it up.
And if you see a masterful. If you see a split screen
I
got to tell you, it is impeccable. The work is impeccable. And
it is.
She was so incredibly, Renee was so welcoming and gracious and so lovely. And you know, I was less concerned really about, oh my, we're going to meet an Academy Award winner. You know, really was, what's her process and how can I support her process and still do my own, and where will that meet? And it was easy peasy, oh so breezy, let me tell you.
And she was humble and kind, and I don't know if you guys...
and a bag of chips but so dutiful. She was either with her iPod or phone, listening exactly to certain, not innuendo, but certain tonal elements, or she was watching video. And there's a scene where you see her go, whoa, 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 whoa.
That's the scene. Yeah. That's the scene I looked up.
Let me tell you, because we shot with multiple cameras, because they were very big, ambitious scenes, especially in the courtroom. So sometimes we were shooting with three cameras, four cameras. She must have done that take 55 times.
Wow.
Exact, because they were coming out at different angles, because they were going to do that multiplicity thing in the screen.
never complained.
And in New Orleans, you know, when you get your call sheet, it says the temperature is, you know, the sun will rise and the sun will set, and this is the temperature, and then it says feels like
the humidity. That's a Michigan thing too.
Yeah.
115 degrees.
Just for our listeners, so okay, anyone listening who wants to watch the thing about Pam after this, which we hope you do. This is what's so fun about these true crime drama these true stories rolling out. You know, I did this with The Dropout with Amanda Seyfried. You have to go watch Elizabeth Holmes. If you haven't, I had to go back and go, oh, holy shit, she really got this woman down. And same thing with Pam Huff. This whoa, whoa, whoa scene where Pam is on the stand. If you YouTube this, Pam Huff on the stand, you see her cadence, the way she speaks, this Missouri accent, and the way that she was literally gaslighting a prosecuting attorney and just not... She controlled the courtroom and to see
the jury. What? Yeah, she the jury. Totally. Yeah, they all were buying all of her BS. And
to see what Renee did with that, to walk away as an actor, any you know thing I'm talking about in terms of inclusion with casting, it's a total different conversation. But she is undeniably masterful in this and took her craft so seriously. And you can't as an actor not be taking mental notes at what she did, just the way she would walk, getting the Slurpee, and just her whole being. It was
the detail. detail was so tremendous. Incredibly specific. And if anyone thinks that she got off easy by working in a padded suit and prosthetics, initially it took almost 4 hours for her to get ready before she got to the set. Before she got to the set. And let me tell you something. They did hire a plus size actress. They hired Katie Nixon. We are plus size actors. And the other thing that I just have to say this, because I think that there were elements of the piece being diminished because she opted to create that character the way she did. She's 53 years old. We know that she can put on weight if she wants to. At some point, it's not healthy. No other actor stepped up and said, I am obsessed by this. Plus size or otherwise, and said, I will lend both my name and finances and executive produce this project. So all of that. And yet on the other hand, there is an enormous double standard that I want to just take a moment to address.
Yeah.
2 days after our trailer, our first preview dropped, there was a... the first trailer dropped for Gaslight, which is starring Julia Roberts and Sean Penn. Yeah. Sean Penn is in prosthetics and a big fat suit.
Oh, is really?
He? Colin Farrell in
He's applauded for Batman.
And a big
big
fat suit. Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks in the upcoming Elvis playing the Colonel.
Oh, right.
Big fat suit and prosthetics.
Yep.
Everyone's saying anything.
You know, Gary Oldman playing Winston Churchill, big fat suit prosthetics.
You're so now, right. Yeah.
The thing that I hear is, these actors have they've
so
transformed them.
What range?
What it must be like to work. And what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if they're going to be talking about the gander and glorifying that, people have to look a little bit more closely and a little bit more open-minded about how difficult that process is, no matter how you undertake it.
Yes.
You know, people talk about, me having been transformed, they didn't recognize me. Again, I had on a wig and glasses. Does that mean that I should have, cut my hair and dyed it? Would that have made it better? Should they have hired someone with dark hair over me? Where do we get to exercise the expanse of our skills and really step in as wholly and authentically and as organically as we can? I understand there's a lot of political correctness right now, and I am an advocate for, a diversity of men and women, abled, disabled, black, white, green, brown, blue, gender fluidity. I am an advocate, but I just want people to be conscious of that double standard.
Yeah.
Because it permeates this industry that the women are blamed and the men are heralded. That's not right.
It's not right.
And Sue Ann, you said it. You said when you auditioned for this, you thought, oh, well, I'll be able to teach because I'm not going to get the part. They're going to give this to a big name. And the fact that they cast you, a steadily working actress with a beautiful career, Renee had say in that. And she picked you.
She had the final say.
Absolutely. And to me, that's why I was like, all right, I have to watch this and support this because one of my people is in this. And it's so important that while we have these political, and one of these political correct times, sometimes we have to pause and go, all right, the best acting coach I ever had said, respect is to look again. So I thought, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to give this a chance. And I not only did I watch it, I couldn't stop. I had to binge watch it. And Mike did the same thing. And I watched it, I think, three times. Because when I love something, I have to watch something. I just kept watching her acting. And I was just like, take notes. Because she, my Aunt Donna always loves to say, go naked when you're going to go for a part like that. And she did. She just was all out and held that space and. We can't do the talk about this without talking about Keith Morrison's voiceover.
Oh, he's the best.
The direction of this piece and the tone of it
I think that's the other reason that I enjoyed watching it so much was I really appreciated the creative direction, because you could take a piece like this and it could be a very dark, somber piece throughout, and the story in and of itself is dark. But there was this satirical, comedic element with his voiceover and the music laced in. And please tell me, you guys, who is the actor who plays Pam's husband? Not Pam's husband.
Sean Bridges is Glenn Fleischer.
Wonderful. Like, he masters that comedic and tragic execution of what's happening with this voiceover when he reacts to the death of his wife, and why they didn't believe his 911 call and all of that. But it's just, it's like comedically brilliantly woven, in those drone shots with Keith Morrison's voiceover, our actual Dateline guy, is just, I love
when
it so
I mean, I'm well. Telling you, when I first read it, not only was I gobsmacked by the story, but I thought, oh, they are taking such a risk. This is so risky. How they're going to shoot it, their cinematic strategy, the, you know, how they're going to, you know, elevate this narrative. And I think Jenny Klein, who was the showrunner and the principal writer, is brilliant.
So
and they gave a female director and creator that chance. That's another thing that's huge, too, is that, you know, I mean, I have to get behind that. Mike, you have so many good questions for Sue Ann. I know she answered a lot of them.
Oh, gosh.
What else do you have in there?
I could talk about thing about Pam for like, we could do like a 20-hour podcast.
We could do a whole episode on the thing about Pam.
Yeah.
But it's so, and the other thing, speaking of podcasts, this is the other thing that's happening. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Gaslit, and my friend Chad was special effects supervisor on Gaslit with Julia Roberts and Sean Penn.
Yeah,
and he said to me, you know, I'm trying to, he's a director and writer too, and he's trying to get different projects off the ground, and he said it's like you have to have a podcast for Shayna, because Think About Pam was a true crime podcast, I think, first. And then the show was developed out of that. Is that correct?
I think it's the reverse. I think it was aired first, then they did a podcast, and
after the Dateline,
and then took the. And I think that we're going to start to see. I think Blumhouse Productions now, who you know, is known for horror primarily, which is, this is a different kind of horror, actually.
Right.
And
true.
I think they're going to be working in conjunction with NBC News to keep this kind of material and projects coming to the forefront, which I think is very exciting. And
it
one
is.
More thing I just want to say, you know, not only do I appreciate Jenny so much, and of course, Renee is executive producer, there were four or five women who were at the helm of this piece.
That's wonderful.
And the other thing was, and I didn't find this out, I knew who was directing the first two episodes. I did not know who was directing the last four. And I did a Zoom with Scott Winan, who was the director, and Jenny before I went out to New Orleans. And when we got on Zoom, Jenny said to me, "So, I hear you teach." And I was like, What? You know, when you kind of short circuit when your lives, you know, the elements of your lives collide. And I said, "Yes, I do." And she said, "Well," she said, "I want to let you know that I was just talking to the director of the third and fourth episode, and she told me that she was one of your students."
What?
So I had the opportunity to work with a wonderful director. Her name is Logan Kibbins, and she had been one of my students. She came out of the School of Film Video, and she had taken my acting class, and it was like the world sort of, you know, balanced out. We went from like teacher student to colleagues, and, you know, her directing me as an actor, and it made me sort of think, all is right with the world.
Oh my gosh, that is so awesome. I love stories like that. I think that's so, it is such a part of the business that we're in. It is. It's, you said it earlier, it's that having that patience, because you never know when those things are going to come full circle. Exactly. It can be years, it can be 10, 20 years before, but then all of a sudden you're on set with someone that you're like, I taught you, like, we worked together like 20 years ago and I was your teacher. Yeah. That is so cool. I love stories like that. So what about, you mentioned it, you touched upon a little bit, Shayna, but I wanted to hear more. We didn't get to fully go into just, you're with auditioning, Sue-Ann, in general, like throughout your whole career. I hate auditioning. I know me personally, I just hate it. I'm terrible at it. I don't like it. It's just been always the bane of my acting existence. Cause I feel like I'm better when I have my role and I can prepare and I'll be on set or I'll show up. Once I get my costume in theater, I'm going to show up and I'm going to do my best and I'll feel good about it, but I need that process. I can't just be like, oh, you have an audition Thursday. It's Tuesday. Here's your sides, show up Thursday and knock it out of the park and impress me over the 3,000 other guys we're going to bring in that look just like you, you know? So I'm like, it's always been my weakness. So what is your feelings on auditioning, but what is also your process in terms of auditioning? How do you prepare?
Strategery.
Yes, strategery, yes.
Well, you know, I was hard pressed to leave the in-room experience. That was very difficult. Mm. I loved being in the space. I loved being able to respond to the energy in the space.
Me too. I miss it.
I loved, you know, there's a group of actresses that I've kind of come up with. And, you know, depending on the day, I could go into the room and I would go, well, you know, if it's not me, it's her. And I love her work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of parody. And then I didn't take the Zoom thing very seriously because I thought this is going to be very short lived.
Yeah. We all thought that, right?
So, right. You know, don't follow my stock tips, needless to say. So I had to acclimate and I had to take it seriously. And I had an acting coach that I worked with years and years and years ago. And I worked with her for a long time. Her name's Joan Darling. And if you don't know who she is, you should. She was one of the first women she was the first woman to receive an Emmy for directing. And the Mary Tyler Moore Show, she came up with Norman Lear. She helped cast Mary Hartman. She worked with, MTM Productions for years and years. Steven Spielberg used to, you know, sleep on her couch when he was first coming up and then hired her for things like Amazing Stories when he was doing television.
Someone needs to do a documentary on her.
Yeah.
She teaches labs at Sundance. She's on the board at Sundance.
Oh, nice.
Okay. And, she's a remarkable, remarkable woman. She was not known necessarily for having strong technical skills or cinematic skills, but she always had a really solid DP with her. But she was known for crafting performances, which I think is, as a director, you know, you can be at the helm of a lot of people who are actually better than you in certain things, but the only person on the set who can handle the actors, deal with the actors, create great collaboration and negotiation is the director. And that was something that was really her strong suit. And when I studied with her, she would just say, auditions, you get to act today.
Yes,
yeah, that's
true.
You get to act, and if you want to shine it on, if you're so invested in what the outcome is rather than what the process is. And I will say now, actually, getting acclimated in the Zoom world, love working with my husband. He's a wonderful, he's not acting now, but he's a wonderful actor. He's wonderful to read with, which makes it really fun. But, you know, when I'm done with that, it's not like I have a long drive from Sony out to the valley where I just have to rethink everything. I can go feed the dogs. I can make dinner. You know, I just, you know, we come out of the studio and our life is happening. And so it can stay more a part of the workspace.
Yeah.
So I guess that's really the thing. You know, I And you never know what when the opportunity is going to befall that cracks something open for you.
Yeah.
You know, when I booked this job, it was the oldest I've ever been. Mm-hmm. And one of the best jobs I ever got. And that's not supposed to, you know, they say, oh, it doesn't work that way. You know, the older you get, the worse. No, no, no. I am here to dispel all of that.
Awesome.
You have to.
You find the fun in the audition process. I love that she says you get to act today. So you're taking that pressure off of the anxiety of this. Oh, I have to get this part. There's all this competition. Look, I get to act. I get to own the space for these 2 minutes. Yes. Make the most of it. If they pick select you, they do. If they don't, it's not your part.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't open. It's not your door.
I'm trying to learn that myself of getting out of my head. Cause I get in my head so much. But I just binge watched The Sopranos as well. I finally watched the whole season, the whole series. I'd never watched it. And I'm obsessed with Edie Falco and James Gandolfini now. They're both just oh my God. That's a whole other acting class.
I got to see Edie on stage.
Oh, really? Oh my God. She is unreal.
Yeah. She did a play called Sideman by Warren Light. And Warren Light has been a showrunner and a creator with the Dick Wolf Law & Order SVU. He's actually just stepping down for the first time. He's taking some time off because he was so completely invested in SVU, trying to get it up and operational during the pandemic. And he's like, I'm tired.
Wow.
But he wrote this beautiful, beautiful play called Sideman, if you haven't read it.
Oh my gosh. I've heard of it. Yeah. And she's one of my favorites. She was so good on that show. But I brought it up for James Gandolfini when he auditioned for Tony. He left, I read, in the middle of the audition, he just left. He walked out. He's like, I blew this. I'm terrible. I'm horrible. And David Chase went after him, and I guess the next day, and said, hey, you know, like, come. Yeah, literally. It was like, hey, come back and read for me again. That was great. You know, and I think that's the thing with auditioning that I'm still learning. And that's why I'm so interested in the process and your thoughts on it, because I'm still at 41, almost 42 years old, trying to like, figure it out, you know, and just understand and have fun and enjoy it and enjoy it. Make it
and
enjoyable.
I try to do the work in the process that is really exciting to me.
Nice.
You know, and it's always like, who am I talking to? Why am I talking to them now? Why is it important? What? And also, I think one of the things where we do ourselves a disservice is when we look at the material, we oftentimes don't read for comprehension. We don't look at it initially as a way to investigate, which to me is part of the building process. It's like a treasure hunt. Yeah. You know, we go right to, it should sound like this. It's, you know, I got to hit this line. It's like, no. Backtrack, you know, rewind, go back to the beginning, read for comprehension. What is happening? Read everything. Every word could be a clue. The difference between what page it's on. You know, you look at a scene and they're cutting it together, but they've actually jump cut between like page 3 and page 28.
Yeah.
You know, you have to finesse those moments. That's part of the, to me, part of the joy of what you accomplish when you set the criteria for yourself rather than for somebody else's expectation.
Nice. That's really awesome.
This is a little mini master's acting class with Sue Ann, too. Like, I'm saying I want to write it down, but we're recording.
Acting. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love doing it. I love talking about it. I love watching it. Yeah. I love talking about somebody else doing it. I love it.
I love it. And it shows. It shows in your work. I mean, it really does. I mean that genuinely. And so what in terms of theater, I wanted to talk real quick about how much theater you've done. A lot of theater then throughout your career.
I've done a ton of theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I sort of lived and loved with was theater first and foremost. That's always where I felt like my soul would get saved. You know, because I was like Judgy McJudgerson about a lot of, you know, television until I realized, oh, pension and insurance. Oh, God.
I saw your paycheck. Yeah.
Right.
Let me give you a really clear example.
Yeah.
Years ago, I did, I was up for and got cast in a movie of the week called Growing Up Brady, which was about the Brady Bunch. Nice. And I was hired to play Ann B. Davis.
Oh my gosh.
And at the same time, I was hired to do the Rose Tattoo for LA Theater Works.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, I took the movie of the week.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, please tell me you took
it. I know. I was like, I thought you were going to say, I did the theater show. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that.
Rose Tattoo.
Sue Ann, you idiot. Yeah.
$500. Yeah. Growing Up Brady,
yeah.
$25,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, at some point you just say, you know, as you're weighing things out that you have a conflict, is like, what might take care of me for a period of time where then I can go over here and do the passion and the love job? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I was very fortunate because I did produce a lot of stuff and I got a lot of awards. I won the Ovation Award 3 times for best performance by an actor.
And what were those? What were those plays, Sue Ann?
I did a play called David's Mother, which is about a woman who had a severely retarded child. I have a severely retarded sibling, and it was one of those kind of perfect marriages between peace and actor, character, life situation. Mm-hmm. I did Napoli Millionaria at the Rogue Theater, which I also produced. And played the lead with Sam Anderson.
Oh, nice.
And it was a piece that I'd wanted to do for like 10 years. And then Streetcar.
Nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Love it. Not even surprised. It's
You know, again, you know, I'd love to get back in the saddle again, but you know, right now I'm getting ready. I'm going to, with my husband and a couple of friends, we're going to South Africa.
Oh, wow.
For most of June. Like, it's one of those sort of trips of lifetime, safari, Cape Town, Johannesburg, going to, you know, Nelson Mandela's museum and the Apartheid Museum. I mean, it's one of those kind of life extravaganzas. And I think, you know, would I want to cancel that trip to do an equity waiver production? Probably not right now, no.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of it though, because we've all been cooped up for 2 years and just the idea of international travel right now gets me so excited.
Yeah.
Like, I need to get on a plane and go somewhere. And,
That's awesome. I mean, I can't wait to hear about that. We'll have to have you back on. You can tell us all about the trip and whatnot.
Yeah,
but,
even when I have another job.
Yeah,
I have another exciting job.
Sue Ann, my head, I've been plotting ways to work with you, so I'm going to manifest that and make it.
Yeah, literally, ditto. What is your favorite story? I mean, of all the shows and all the projects you worked on, do you have any stories that you like? You're like, oh my God, that was such an amazing moment or a funny story or anything that on the set or a film you worked on or a TV show. I mean, you've done so much.
You know, I mean, there's wonderful things sort of come out of all of them. It's probably the darker ones that, you know, kind of kicked my butt a little bit. I'll tell you, I had worked on a show. It was a sitcom. I'm not going to name names because that seems really sad. But the lead, a female, had just come out of rehab and needed it and was just out of rehab and was clearly not ready to be out of rehab and wouldn't rehearse. We were called down to the set at one point and they set the script on fire in front of the entire cast and crew, all the department heads. It was a bleak situation, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And I called my agent and I said, I don't think that we will last the week, you know.
No. That's
and
a story.
And I did. They threw the script out. And so, you know, they had to pay me. But anyway, so cut to 2 weeks later, I get booked on Third Rock. Third Rock. And my scene is with John Lithgow.
Oh, that's awesome.
And can I just tell you, we laughed while we were rehearsing until we peed our drawers. and then before we taped, we went into his dressing room to read the lines. Everybody was in there. And he had hand drawings that he had done for every one of the guest stars.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome.
Guests. and I still have it. And I remember seeing, looking out. Now, I was, of course, crushed that I had lost that job. Okay, crushed.
Yeah.
Crushed.
Yeah.
And, but I remember just before we went on to set to tape, I saw the people from this other show that shall remain nameless coming back from lunch to work, and they looked so beaten down, downtrodden. And all of us were like, we're having a good time. We're having a good time. So that to me was, again, one of those moments where you think, oh, this door is closed. My career is over. I didn't do the right, you know. And then all of a sudden, there's the other thing that shows you, you know, there's a better way and there's more possibilities beyond which, you know, you can't even conceive of. So, you know. Yeah. Don't leave until the miracle happens.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. I love that. So having said that, and as I'm almost done with my questions, I know Shannon, then you have some too, some fun ones, but, yeah. But what would you say that now, after all that you've accomplished and all the amazing roles and work that you've had, what would you say now, if you could go back and to your, when you were in your 20s or when you were starting out, what do you wish you would have learned, or could you tell yourself like, hey, here's advice right now.
Be braver.
What's that?
Be braver.
Braver. Okay.
Yeah. Don't be so afraid. Don't be so afraid of what somebody else thinks about you, because they probably aren't actually. And we can get very swayed. You know, we can get sucked down into thinking, oh, well, so-and-so didn't, or I messed up, or and I think, and I try to say this now to my students, and you know, and they're grad students, and a lot of them are really pretty cooked, and a lot of them have taken gap years and have lived, done other things, is you know, it, each job is not the end of the journey, that each job is a way station, you know, along a very almost infinite path of discovery and process. And to be willing to say that, you know, a mistake or a flub or what we deem as failure can be fuel and benefit rather than punishment. That's really important to me. And I wish I would have learned that earlier, but you know, it takes what it takes to compile.
What we see as failure can be seen, can be used as fuel.
Absolutely. And especially in our industry, in any kind of art form, I mean, it's not like we're CPAs. It's not like if we make a mistake, somebody's going to lose $1 million. It's not like we're brain surgeons, and if we nick somebody in the wrong place, they won't be able to tap dance.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to be able to have a measure of exploration that leads us to places, and some of, we would not get there but for the fact that we stumbled or fell or took a detour to, or with a choice that was not the right choice, but for the fact we applied ourselves to that choice, gives us that image and that revelation of, now it's this personalization. This is the crux of the scene. You know, and you can't know that unless you really explore the territory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful. Totally. Totally.
I love it. That's awesome, Sue. And that really, really resonates deeply. I needed to hear all of this. So as Josh Duhamel says on the Brilliant series, The Thing About Pam, no further questions.
You know, I want to say something though, the acting coach in me is like tap dancing in my brain right now. Because I was hired to direct one of my closest friends. Her name's Ariel Robinson. She's doing a short film. We're filming in Missouri in September. It's she wrote it. It's about maternal mental health, a great little short. And she said to me recently, oh my God, it's really happening. I'm having all this anxiety, and what if I'm not good enough and I need to deliver and I have all these people on board. And I said to her, Ariel, do you think your character feels super confident and she's got her shit together and she's perfect? And she said, no. And I said, this is your ammo. This is your fuel.
you need to channel all this that you're feeling into this character, because if you felt perfect and you had your shit completely together and this was not a piece about mental health, then I don't think you're right for this part right now. And that made, it just reminds me of what you just said, Sue-Ann. So thank you for
That's so true. It's so
true. You got to use it. And
when you have that remarkable congruency between where you are as an actor and where the character is, then you start mining the other areas, you know, and examining the other places where you build in a complexity of the character. But, you know, don't fight the places where you're congruent, you know, where there's more than just a parallel. There's, you know, you're entrenched with the dilemma of the character. Then you don't have to work so hard.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. Because how else are you going to have that empathy and hit those emotional
waves
if you don't know what it feels like? Then we're acting, right? It's not a problem. So I love that. Just quickly, I want to insert this in here because of some synchronicities with us. So Michael's a licensed therapist, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month, which is a topic I'm really passionate about. And Sue-Ann, just for, I have some questions about your favorite films, but I've posted about Lars and the Real Girl a couple times on my social media, and you always comment, oh, I love this film too. And I just watched it again, revisited this, and I just, such a great film about trauma responses, mental health. What do you love about that film?
I think it's humanity. I loved how the people rallied around him to allow him that experience until it came to its natural conclusion.
Yeah.
God, it's so well said.
To me, it was sort of like It's a Wonderful Life. It reminded me of somebody who went down like a dark hole and, you know, has found this unusual way to cope. And they were loved until they were through it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfectly said. Yeah.
It is perfectly said.
Yeah.
And thank you for that. Yeah. So Mental Health Awareness Month gave me a great excuse to talk about a film I love, but that you also love. So I have some fun questions for you. And then we always end with the Inside the Actor Studio questions. But
yes,
I just wrote this down.
sorry, I didn't mean to break the microphone, but that's always been my dream.
Oh, yay. Awesome.
Right? That's why I love to do it, because we always wanted to sit by James Lipton and do it. He's no longer with us, so you get to
R.I.P.
do it.
R.I.P. James.
And I purposely don't tell the actor or writer or director we interview we're doing that, because I like to be organic. But before we go into James's questions, a couple of fun questions here. First thing that comes to mind, your favorite comedic film?
It used to be Annie Hall, and it's not anymore. It's not. Because I also don't think the film holds up. Lost in America is still one of my favorite films. You know, I lost the nest egg, I lost the nest egg, I lost the nest egg.
I have never seen this. Have you seen
this? Oh my God.
Yeah, I was thinking Lost in Translation, but Lost in America.
America. It's an Albert Brooks film. You know, he also did Defending Your Life, which I think is really a remarkable film. You have to see Lost in America.
Okay.
Yeah, it might not hold up, but there are some of the funniest scenes. I still remember, you know, the Desert Inn has heart. The Desert Inn has heart. You'll understand if you watch it.
okay, awesome.
Those probably.
Lost in America.
Lost in America, yeah.
Favorite dramatic film?
That's really hard. The first one that came to mind is probably Schindler's List.
Oof.
That's the first one. Yeah.
Favorite TV show?
I love Lucy, The Hollywood Years. I'm Andy Griffith, the old Andy Griffith, black and white with Don Knotts, playing Barney Fife. Law and Order. The old Law and Order. Those are my templates. Most recently, I would say Yellow Jackets.
Oh, ooh, I want to see that. Yeah, that looks amazing.
A friend of mine plays one of the leads, Melanie Linsky, and cool. I think she's quite wonderful. So that would, it was very hard to watch, but there was something I really loved about the examination of these women and being child friends and what that meant to, again, to survive an outrageous traumatic event and what that led them to.
Okay. Now we have to watch it, because
it's number one on my to watch list. Yeah. Coming up.
Okay. So. Yeah. Favorite band or musician?
Oh, probably, you know, Eva Cassidy.
I love her.
You know, Bonnie Raitt, Bette Midler.
Mm.
I love a lot of the old school gals. You know, Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I love Emmy Harris. I mean, there's a.
Oh yeah.
Love that.
I like women in my music.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I was just watching old interviews with Janis Joplin. Oh. Like on late night shows, and it was fascinating to watch those.
Yeah.
Favorite cartoon as a child?
I was not a cartoon person.
You weren't a cartoon kid. Were you watching? You were watching I Love Lucy.
Yeah, I actually don't remember. I mean, I don't remember cartoons.
Interesting.
I remember the Howdy Doody show used to scare the crap out of
me. He's creepy. Yeah.
So creepy.
Yeah.
We had more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, Romper Room. I'm old. You know, these were going way back.
It's all awesome, and it's giving me ideas of new things to watch. I don't know if this will come to you quickly or not. I wrote down favorite Disney villain.
I would say probably the Queen in Snow White.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. Really good one.
I actually play her.
Oh, cool.
It usually comes down to who do I want to play.
100% Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty is also really cool with the big horns.
Oh yeah.
All right, let's do Inside the Actor Studio question.
This is hilarious.
All right, I love it. All right, here we go. I can't do his voice, but so he's very very dramatic and took his time. What is your favorite word?
Onomatopoeia.
Ooh.
Least favorite word?
Revenge.
Mm. Favorite curse word?
Mother.
We got it.
You can say it. You can let it out, Suman.
What turns you on?
Oh, boy. Good fragrances, the ocean, traveling.
Love it. What turns you off?
Oh, I want to say something.
I can read your mind right now because I'm thinking the same thing.
Yeah, there's certain politicians.
Mm.
inappropriately. Yeah, that really turns me off.
I'd say it goes in the category of deceit, manipulation, psychopathy, what we're talking about there.
Pam Hot, yeah.
There we go, yeah. What sound or noise do you love?
Either my husband or my puppies, the sound of them sleeping and mumbling and humming and running, you know, those.
Totally. What sound or noise do you hate?
Squeaky sneakers, somebody touching balloons. The fingernails on the blackboard, that does not bother me, but
that rubber sound, it like hurts your teeth.
Oh, yeah. I get that.
I had playoff tickets for the Lakers, and I had to leave during intermission or whatever.
Because you couldn't handle the sneakers. I couldn't handle it. That's your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Okay. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would love to have been one of Bette Midler's harlots.
Oh.
Amazing.
One of
that
her
sounds like a great dance. Dream sequence.
Nice. Yeah.
And then the last James Lipton question. If heaven exists, what would you like God to say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I've been waiting for you and your friends are here.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this, Sue. Seriously.
Thank you. We appreciate your time.
Good. It's
lovely to see you.
You too.
Great to see you too.
Yeah. We'll see you again sooner than later, hopefully. Yeah.
Let's stay in contact.
All right.
Have a great day. Thank you.